In this session, we're going to be talking about one of the emotions that breaks down communications. That's anger. Anger, I suppose, has got to be one of the biggest problems in marriage there is today. Our lesson aim is to define the term anger. Number two, to find out what makes us angry. Number three, to evaluate our responses to anger. Number four, to analyze our attitude and responses in regards to getting angry. It is a fact that most couples want to communicate even when they're angry. They want to. It's that they have not been taught or simply do not know how to communicate at that time when their emotions are seemingly controlled. Yet, communication is so vital at that time. It's the only thing at that time that will help. And please don't read into this. When I'm saying the only thing, it's prayer. You know what I mean? Because in most teaching that Polly and I do are done to Christian groups, occasionally speaking to business, motivators kind of thing, speaking to salesmen. But generally, we're speaking to people, and I know you're always assuming to start out with that there's prayer, there's Bible reading. There's that tenderness that ought to be at all times between couples. But at all of the times that we become angry, we must communicate. That we have not been taught how to communicate at a time like this. Let's talk about, first of all, the definition for anger. The simplest one I have been able to find is that it is a strong emotion or feeling of displeasure. A strong emotional feeling of displeasure. Whatever displeases us, at whatever level we want to think about, it is a level of anger. But let's start. What makes us angry? It's really only one thing that makes us angry. Only one. That's when a goal has been blocked or threatened to be blocked in our life. A simpler way to put that would be when we do not get our own way or get what we want. But when a goal has been blocked or is threatened to be blocked, when it looks like we're not going to arrive where we need to arrive or when we need to arrive, when it looks like the things planned are not going to happen, that moment the feeling, the emotion of displeasure comes in and we begin to feel frustration, and in that moment, anger breaks out at some level in our life. And when anger comes, it always, without exception, generates energy. And it's from the energy that comes, that rises up at that moment, that causes us or impels us to want to or destroy whatever has angered us. Anger has its positive points as well as its negative points. For example, one of our built-in goals is survival. How many in this live audience would raise your hand and say, Perry, one of my goals is to survive. Let me see your hand. Can identify with that? Also, justice is another goal in our life. How many in this live audience want to see justice prevail? Can I see your hand? Yes, we want to see justice prevail. And when that does not happen, we are angered. And could I tell you, and I hope you won't go down the street and build a church in the next 15 seconds while I'm telling you this, literally, God gave us the emotion of anger. I wish I'd have known that 40 years ago. We were taught that if you got angry, it's wrong, it's bad. Was no good reason to get angry. We didn't understand it. We didn't know what God was saying. Jesus really became angry at times. Can y'all read accounts some of the times he got angry? Yeah, several places in the Word. Time and time again, it's mentioned. Mark suggests one time when he became angry. he saw, it was on the Sabbath, and he saw this person that had the withered hand. And the religious cults were looking upon him and saying, is he going to do this? Is he considering healing this man? Why, how dare him to think of doing a thing like this on the Sabbath day? Jesus said that he saw the intent of their heart. And when he did, he said, stretch forth your hand. And he stretched forth his hand, and it was healed. Jesus had a goal blocked. He came to heal people. Do you know that? Did you know it's his will to heal everybody? I believe that. I believe he wants to heal everybody. I believe that's his plan. And I believe he's given us, in the Word, a plan where that can happen. Why, God made a promise in the Old Testament. When he promised Israel, none of these diseases will come upon you if you'll do what? Obey my word. No clinic can make that kind of guarantee. No doctor, no hospital can make that kind of guarantee today. And yet God said that was his plan. Now, I thought years ago that when they walked across the boundary line of Egypt into the wilderness that God suddenly healed them. Oh, they were already well. They were already following his plan. They were already living out his principles. Not a feeble one in 2 or 3 million people, and all of them well. But they knew how to follow God's word. I believe that's God's plan today. I wish I had the time to tell you what God did in my life a few years ago when he was putting our life together and putting our total life together. Had a lot of physical problems. Had since early childhood. But when I got my life together, I got up one morning and I said, darling, you realize that I'm well? I don't have a physical problem that I've had all of my life. Had 5 problems, some of which were very major. I don't have a pain today. I don't have an ache today. Doesn't mean that if you do have that you're sinning. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about there's a way to walk in God to where in most cases we avoid most sicknesses. Doctors say today that 60 to 100% of all of the diseases that come on men are a result of stress, frustration, or their response to in this present life. Dennis Whately just said in his recent tapes that 70% of all the people who go see a physician only have problems related to the stress in their life. And 52% of those who go believe they need to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist because of the stress that comes to their life. God wants you to be well. Thy will be done, he said, on earth as it is in heaven. Is it his will for illness to be in heaven? Don't believe so. I believe if you'll start seeking his plan, seeking God's righteousness, his right way of doing things, or being right with God, I believe you'll be well. I think one of the major problems that we've experienced when campaigns, and please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Don't read anything into what I'm saying except exactly what I say. I believe one of the problems when we've had ministers come to town and great healing services, and I believe in it. Our daughter was healed of a major problem several years ago, many years ago, when she was just a little tot, in a great healing campaign. But surveys have shown that 6 months after the survey, after the campaign, you go back to these people, and most of them are sick with the same problem again. Is that saying God didn't do it? No. He did it, but the way we live brings back the same problems we had before. Y'all there? Hello? Yeah. Yeah. Can't live under stress. Body wasn't designed for it. Can't stand it. Won't do it. Wasn't built that way. Got to learn to live in peace, harmony with God. Want to have peace in your heart? Let me give you a key. I'm not off the lesson. I'm dead center of it. A key is to accept with joy whatever comes your way. Write it down. If you'll learn to do that, you'll have peace every day of your life. Every day of your life. Accept it, whatever it is, good, bad, medium, or indifferent. Accept it. You'll have peace every day of your life. Ephesians, the 4th chapter, verse 26, talks about anger. Says, when you're angry, and this is from the Amplified, do not sin, do not even let your wrath, your exasperations, your fury or indignation last until the sun goes down. If you do, you're going to lose four things. Number one, you're going to lose sleep. Right? Number two, you're going to lose friends. Probably your wife or your hubby or somebody else. You're going to lose peace. And number four, you're going to lose your health. It is a fact. So Paul said, don't let the sun go down on the problem. Resolve the problem every time there's a problem. That was the key, baby, wasn't it? We learned we didn't have to live with a problem, that I didn't have to repress the feeling and ignore it, that we could just resolve the problem. We found out how to live every day. Isn't that exciting? To know that you can have a conflict, resolve the problem, and go from there. Boy, what a way to live. Let me tell you, there are four responses that we normally take to anger. The first one is a no-no. Do not do it. The way we've been doing it as a church for years. Do not repress. That's with an R. Do not repress anger. That's where we ignore it. How many times have you heard a husband say, no, I'm not angry? Well, you could tell he wasn't angry. I said, I'm not angry. Did you hear me? Why did we say it? Because we were taught that. We were taught that anger was from the devil. Now, there are certain kinds that are certainly motivated by him. You know, when we don't get our little petty way about doing something we wanted to do, then we get angry. The Bible said, put that kind of anger away. That's what he said. So we repressed it. We pushed it down. You can push it down in your tummy, and it'll keep the score. Yep, there's one for the time I argued with her. Next thing you know, you'll have acid indigestion. Y'all never had that? Upset tummy. Ever hear that? Y'all ever hear Rolaid? Digel? Melantha? Drunk it by the gallon. Yeah. I had a package and everything I owned that had a pocket in it and never had enough. Would you believe me today if I told you that that will seldom happen in my life today? Please don't feel put down by that. I lived most of my life. I lived a half a century not knowing I could live any other way. Nobody ever told me how to live. I'm sure not trying to pass the buck on somebody else. I'm telling you, I didn't know how to live. The result of that one day I said to my church, I'm going to resign in all love and kindness, I said, because I wasn't mad at anybody. And the church certainly was not mad at me. I said, I do not know how to live my own life. I refuse to try to tell you how to live. It was at that time in my life, God saw I was dead serious about finding answers for my life. When you get that serious about your life and how to live, you're going to start answers for it. And that's what happened in my life. What do you do then, Perry? We're going to look at the positive side. First of all, you suppress it. That's with an S. You suppress it. That simply means that you try to keep it under control. Is that possible? I believe so. Proverbs 29:11 in the Amplified says, a confident fool utters all his anger, but a wise man keeps it back and stills it. I guess one way you could say it would be you count to 10. That's the common term. You count to 10. Proverbs 14:29 says, a wise man controls his temper. He knows that anger can cause mistakes. Psalms 37:8 in the Amplified says, cease anger and forsake wrath. Fret not. It tends only to evil doing. Then what do we do? The second step. In sequence, you confess it. You confess it. You recognize it's there, and you confess it. Just simply confess that your feelings are getting out of control. I may get a phone call, something may happen in the day, and you know what I say to Polly? Long before I'm heated up. And that's what the word fret means. Look in Psalms 37. You'll read it several different times. Each time he talks about being fretting and fretting about, he's talking about don't get all heated up. Don't get all hot under the collar. Don't get all stewed up about the thing. Long before that moment, I say to Polly, because it may be over something else completely out of our control, or it may be something I've done or something is happening as a result of something I've done. The moment I recognize it, I say to Polly, I'm having difficulty with my emotion. You know what happens? When you do that, it's like turning a pressure valve. And the pressure starts bleeding off, and you start immediately feeling less pressure. See, it's when you begin to get heated up like this and begin to feel this kind of pressure that the artery around the heart start contracting, start getting smaller, start a spasm inside. They start shrinking up and the blood can't flow properly. It's the reason the face is extreme. The perspiration breaks out. A result of the stressfulness that comes inside. The moment you say, this is bothering me. Now you never say, you're making me mad. You never say, you're making me angry. You always assume the blame. Take the blame. In most cases, you are. After you've confessed it, we need immediately to begin to say things like, I'm sorry, angry. Not that you made me angry. I'm so angry. I want to work it out. And at this moment, we recognize that with anger came the energy, so we must get ready. How do you do that? You wash the car, hoe the weeds out of the garden, mow the lawn, fix the girls. You may scrub the kitchen floor, wash the windows, ride a bike, jog around the block. Do any number of things. You get rid of the energy. And once you get rid of the energy, then you're ready to take the third step. Step number three. With energy gone, you've already taken it under control. You have already you've already confessed that you're having difficulty with your emotions. Then the third thing, you express it with an E. You express it. After you've jogged around the block, rode the bike, washed the car, hoed the garden, mowed the lawn, or whatever you might do, do anything to get rid of the anger. Not long ago, phone call came, was a little disturbing to me. Walked outside, put on my old boots, got out the chamois, got out the bug rag, hope. Polly said, like you're sure am cleaning up your name. Boy, I suspected she'd say, it'd be nice if you get angry more often. Dirty as the car. So if you see our car looking a little extra clean, you'll recognize that something unusual's going on at our house. In expressing it, there are three factors that must, first of all, you must find that time. You come back from wherever you've been, whatever you've done to get rid of the energy, and you say to your mate, for example, it's a problem between the two of you. Could we talk about it? If your mate, of course, has not been involved, and since you now have learned how to control it, to where your mate is not drawn. I think one of the greatest truths, darling, we ever learned was a truth that you felt like and I've felt like has been so vital to our life. Would you like to share that? That is the fact that we're not the target. When Polly learned she was not the target, when I learned that if Polly, and it's a rare thing, I don't know if Polly's ever really been angry at me. She's a doll. A few times? I love that girl. But it's me that may get angry. But now then that Polly doesn't, she knows she's not the target. She never responds like she's the target. Of course, Polly never would argue any time in her life. In fact, Polly grew up in one of those homes where really we're not allowed to talk too much in your early life. Isn't that right, darling? So, Polly said she was a master at... So, Polly pouted, and I expressed what I felt. Only I did it the moment that it happened. You know, I said this before, but I feel about repeating. I just was amazed at how good I felt after I'd told her how I really felt. But I noticed that I had difficulty with Polly. And particularly, if I wanted to go to bed in a little while and we wanted to have an intercourse, well, I couldn't understand why Polly felt so upset and I felt so good about everything. Did I say the wrong word? I said, when we got ready to go to bed, it has to be resolved. And in most cases, fellas think you can argue with her at supper time and go to bed and have a normal sex experience. Forget it, fellas. It'll never work. Girls, y'all ain't even cooperating with me or your hubby. True, girls? Go ahead. He knows how you feel anyway. Oh, is my face ever red? Boy. I used to go squirrel hunting, and Polly and I were just back in the area where I used to squirrel hunt as a boy, and I figured out how to do it. You just go through the woods till you find a big tree, got a grapevine going to the top, and you shake the grapevine right hard, and then whatever runs out, you start shooting at it. So when I started preaching, I just did the same thing. I think I just shook the right tree. I'll get back to shooting at this a little while later. So I found the right time. You find the right time to talk about it. You say, could we talk about it after? Fine with me. Energy's gone now, see? So you're not ready to fight. You're not to slam things. You're not ready to throw a saucer or a cup or a paprika. Energy's all gone. You're in a better frame of mind to be able to deal with it. Then you find the proper place. So important. Listen, fellas, they're employers. Employees, make notes of this. Those girls here that work for other people, be sure that you're getting a hold of this, because this will work. People have come from everywhere. Phone calls, letters, people are talking about. We have some guys in our friendship that fly these F-400 Phantom jets all over the country. Probably circle up here every once in a while. It takes about 15 miles to turn them around. They circle over the house pretty regular, knock out the window lights and what have you, and flying those things. And they were telling us about a recent encounter in Panama and how they had heard the teaching. And first thing they got back, it said, Perry, you can't leave the problems we encountered, the goals we got blocked. And but we all, since we'd all been to the seminars and since you'd been to the guard to talk to us on a regular basis, the 88th Tactical Fighting Group, we knew exactly what to do. And we did it, and it works. So you start for place. It's an ideal place. Get in the car, like the pastor said. Drive out to a comfortable place. Drive out to a go to the Holiday Inn. Get in a quiet corner. Get somewhere where you can sit down, where you can talk about it. Find the time and the place. And number three, you got to find the right posture. Right? Never. Now, Churchill could say that better than anybody. And it's all words you should. But in this case, I want to say never stand up and talk about the problem. Standing up and never wave an arm. The moment that you point a finger, you become the harsh parent. Talking to the child ego state, and you immediately have real problems. So what do? You sit down. You sit down, and your words get softer and sweeter. And after all, you may have to eat them, so you better make them soft and sweet. I have even suggested that it's an ideal thing to even lay down. Stretch out. The more horizontal you can get, the better you'll be able to communicate. The softer your words will be, that's extremely important when you're angry.